Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, how does Avishai Cohen feel about making mistakes? Avishai Cohen was born in Tel Aviv in 1978 and began performing in public at the age of 10. He played his first solos with a big band and later toured with the Young Israeli Philharmonic Orchestra. At the age of 18, he was granted a full scholarship to the prestigious Berklee College of Music in Boston, and in 1997, he established an international reputation by placing third in the Thelonious Monk Jazz Trumpet Competition. Avishai is active internationally as a leader, co-leader, and sideman with various groups. He records and tours the world as part of the prestigious SF Jazz Collective, and also with the Three Cohens Band with his sister, clarinetist Anat, and brother, saxophonist Yuval. He's also founding member and co-leader of Third World Love, which was founded in 2002 in Barcelona, with bassist Omer Avital, pianist Yonatan Avishai, and drummer Daniel Friedman. His first album, The Trumpet Player, was recorded in 2002, and since then he has played on over 30 albums, either as a leader or part of a group. His group Triveni, with Omer Avital on the bass and Nashit Waits on the drums, was critically acclaimed when they released their first album in 2010. He's now touring Europe with their third album, Dark Nights, and will give three concerts in Spain next week. Accompanying him on this tour are Justin Brown on the drums and Yoni Zelnick on the bass. We spoke with Avishai about his music and the upcoming concerts.
Thank you very much for speaking with us. Could you first give us a little background about yourself? Because I know you began to play the trumpet at a very early age.
I was 8.
How did that happen? Was your family a musical family? Your parents?
Yeah, well, my sister started playing the first instrument was actually the organ when she was 6. You know, with the combination, the hands and the feet and everything. And then the first one to pick up a horn was my brother, actually. He also started on mandolin, but then he picked up the alto saxophone, and he started playing. And it was in the conservatory in Jaffa, and soon after, me and my sister joined. And my sister picked up the clarinet, and I picked up the trumpet. So that was my first instrument. And the funny thing is that no one ever stopped. You know, sometimes you kind of follow the steps of your older brother. Mm. And if he ever stopped and went to just play soccer or something else, it could have set up an example. And, oh, yeah, we can do other things. But truth is that we all felt pretty natural in the music. And I think we had a natural talent for it. And it was pretty obvious for us and for everyone around. And it just became the thing in the house, you know, 3 times a week in the conservatory, art, junior high, then art, high school. We all went to Berklee, studied there, got scholarships and everything, and still doing that.
How did you happen to choose the trumpet, or you just liked the trumpet?
I just liked it. My brother used to come home with a friend named Tomer Levy. He still plays trumpet. He's in the States. He's a lot in the salsa scene. And they used to play together from the Omni book, the Charlie Parker book. And I used to see that, and I think that's what made me fall in love with that horn. The joke in the house that as the third sibling trying to get the easy way out, it looks like the easiest instrument, just 3 valves. Huh. But little did I know that it's probably one of the hardest instruments to play.
Yeah. When you were studying as a child, were you studying classical music? I mean, did you have a kind of a classical training and then you went to jazz?
Well, when you start in the conservatory, you don't play classical, but you play, I would say, light classical and a mixture of many, many things. Some classical, some, you know, like Bernstein, or old songs, old American songs, old Israeli songs. Just a mixture of anything. You basically learn how to read music, how to produce a sound. It's not, you don't start necessarily with a classical music. So I started with jazz before I did classical music. At the age of 10, I was already playing in two different big bands, and later on joined the Dixieland. And that was actually my first love. I later on at high school started to play classical music just to get deeper with the horn. And I played in the Young Israeli Philharmonic Orchestra for a few years. And we toured as well. And we played under great conductors, Kent Nagano, Kurt Mazur, Zubin Mehta. And I felt like I had to choose. I couldn't do both. And jazz always felt like home to me. Still these days, I think some of the most scary experiences I ever had in music was in the classical world. Because, you cannot make mistakes. And I like mistakes. I like making mistakes. I like people around making mistakes. And then see what you can do with it. And I don't like that pressure of that, that perfectness.
Yeah, but then, well, that's almost like a philosophical thing. I mean, then what is a mistake? I mean, if you can turn it into something else, then was it really a mistake, you know?
Exactly. In jazz, you can do it, but in a classical world, you cannot make mistakes. You know, I'm saying, obviously, once you play perfect, then the music comes. Then there's interpretation, there's how engaged you are, how beautiful you play the piece. But it first of all has to be perfect. You cannot, you don't go in a concert house and slide a note, and you don't make mistakes, or you shouldn't. That's at least the given starting point. And you also see classical people who freak out. You know, they have to deal with enormous amount of pressure. And I like what you said, and that's my philosophy. It's not when I play now, I don't call it mistakes. It's like, you learn to know your body and you learn to know your instrument, and then also your limitation can become your strength if you know how to work it. Mm-hmm. And that's a deep process. And this is what I like to do, this with music.
You play both classical and original pieces, and I was wondering how you choose which classical pieces to play. Are there any specific musicians who've most inspired you?
Well, I never do it consciously, but I notice that people who repeat a lot in my playing, as far as who I choose to play, would be Charles Mingus, Ornette Coleman, Duke Ellington, John Coltrane. Those would be four names I always go back to. And of course, then there's other, and my last album, I did play Mingus' tune. I did dedicate a tune for Ornette. It wasn't his tune, it was my tune, but it was for him. And his spirit is a lot in my playing, at least I consider it to be. I played, not Duke, but I played a Billy Strayhorn composition, Lush Life, one of the most amazing tunes ever written. Yeah, those people, I mean, Duke and Mingus, to me, are the most brilliant composers ever lived. Ornette is in a different category, but his music inspires me to play differently. He treats his compositions not as a brilliant composition. For him, this music is just a template from which you can create and improvise. It's not about how beautiful the composition is, but it's a state of mind. And I like that a lot. And Coltrane is funny because I always referenced as the innovator and the saxophone player that everyone coming from, or most everyone at least. But the composer element in Coltrane's music is just talked less about, because just because he was such a phenomenal saxophone player that people don't talk about it enough, but I like some of his compositions. I think it's the most beautiful music ever written. Just now, I'm in a sound check before a concert in Amsterdam right now, and we rehearsed Wise One. That's one of his compositions from the album Crescent, which the whole album is perfect. Sample. Every composition there is just beautiful. But this one, Wise One and Crescent, you just listen to it, you want to cry. The melodies are so beautiful.
Did growing up in Israel influence your music in any way?
I think growing up anywhere influences you no matter what you want to do or what you think. You grow in a place, you're influenced by the people around you, by the music that is played in the radio, by music you other people around you hear, or you know, you pass by a car, you hear some dad, you see a TV, the music influences you, you know, whatever, wherever you are. And there's great Israeli songwriters, great Israeli composers that influence me a lot. I'm never trying to purposely bring that vibe into my music. I'm not looking to be an Israeli musician. I'm not classifying myself as one. I am. I am from Israel. I guess I'm an Israeli musician, but I'm not looking for ways to distinguish myself as one, you know. And as much as I've been influenced from the music in Israel, I think I've been influenced by many other types of music. Half my life, I lived in the States, my adult life. So at the same time, I was influenced by Rachmaninoff and by Bob Marley and by Ella Fitzgerald and Frank Sinatra and Louis Armstrong and all those people that are as a part of me as any Israeli musician.
I'd like to talk a little bit about your new album, which you're touring with now and which you will be in Spain with next week, Dark Nights. This is your third album, and I read that it's different from the first two because you didn't play the music together before it was recorded in the studio, and each piece didn't have more than two takes. So is this sort of like jamming?
Well, you can call it jamming. However, the difference is the history that I have with the musician that I played with. It would have been a jam if it would be with a musician I never played with. But the reason the album sounds the way it does is because the amount of hours that we haven't played before the session. It was just these specific compositions that I haven't rehearsed with the band, and we didn't have a way to play this, a certain tune. Anyway, a lot of my music is very open. It doesn't require a lot of rehearsal. I'm talking about the music specifically I write for Triveni, just for that reason. So you can you don't have to be concerned with the music on the paper, but rather be concerned with how you play and how you play with each other and how you communicate and how you listen. So just the other day, yesterday actually, I talked with the promoter here in Holland, and he told me, "Hey, you know what? The tune in the album, You in All Directions, every time you play it live, it's very heavy and gets to this rumble. And in the album, it's a very stripped down version. Why? Why did you choose to play like that?" I was like, "Well, first of all, we didn't choose anything because that was the first time we ever played that tune. And that was the first impression. So we didn't have a reference of how the music should be." And I think that's sometimes when you play the music a lot and you know what it should be, there is something interesting about it because you know where you're going. On the other hand, you're really limited because you have a preconceived idea of what should be. And sometimes when you take that element out and you don't know what it should be, then you're really in the moment. It should be. It should just be now.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. That in the actual concerts, if you're playing this music over and over again, has it kind of lost any of its original freshness?
Well, maybe somewhat, but then this is my job. At least the way I see it is how to find it again and again. And sometimes you do it better than other times. Meaning, sometimes I would go to the same vibe that we played last night. Or sometimes I'll be conscious of it and be like conscious not to go there, not to go to the known, not to go to your comfort zone. And this is a real balance because sometimes what you do every night becomes part of the arrangement. Some stuff that happens naturally every night, maybe there needs to be there every night. So it's not always about blocking that repetition. It's really an interesting way to make music. It's not an obvious thing, and it's not everyone's approach. This is not what music should be. You know, this is what music should be for me. This is the way I like to do it. Some people like to narrow things down and to repeat. Some people have no problem with repeating things. Jesus, I've seen artists in different genres, you know, pop and rock and roll, people repeat everything they say in between the songs. People repeat the same solo. People repeat the same movement, you know. And maybe there's nothing wrong with it. I'm not even judging it. I'm just saying, for me, I like the search to be, you know, we play this music for a reason. And jazz is a beautiful thing. And I get to play music where I can be free. And one of the joys for me is to keep myself challenged and keep myself interested and keep myself on my toes to be like, well, I'm playing here today. And how connected I am to the moment, how connected I am to what's the feeling of today, how connected I am to my drummer and my bass player, how connected am I to my audience tonight. And the audience is a big part of it, too. They're in the audience. They're part of the ambience of the room. And you feed off that energy, and you feed off their vibe. And it's a matter of just being aware of that and trying to remember it. And sometimes you forget, and sometimes you remember. And it's an ongoing thing. It's a challenge for life, you know. It's not for a specific show or anything. This is a choice of how to play your music.
Can you tell us something about the other members of the group and the guests on the album?
Yeah, well, the tour I'm doing now is a little different than the musicians on the album, because Omer Avital and Ashit Waits, who are on the album, each one is doing his own band as well, and not every time they're available for touring. So I'm coming to Spain with Yoni Zelnik on bass, and Justin Brown, who just joined the band yesterday for the first time. And we had, you see, this is the beauty of this music. I said before, yesterday we played a concert. It was very, very, it felt really good and very natural. But Justin and Yoni just met yesterday afternoon. They didn't even know each other from before. So no rehearsals, just learned the music before. And we went over a few details and played a show. It's so beautiful to see and experience. A couple of words about the guests on the album is my sister, Annette Cohen, great, the world's best clarinetist, as every list in every jazz paper always calls her, and that's true, because she is amazing. So she came down, played a few tunes, Joel Clayton as well. They both came together from the West Coast on the same flight, and on the way they stopped in the studio, and join me for a couple of tunes, and as well great French, Israeli, she's from many places, but there's Karen Ann, she's a really great singer and a good friend of mine, and I'm on some of her albums. She's amazing singer-songwriter, producer, many things, and she just stopped by and did a tune with us, old school, same way, just sing the song and go, no editing, no fixing.
Well, best of luck on this tour, and we're really looking forward to seeing you in Spain.
I'm looking forward then.
Yeah, me too. Thank you so much.
Trivedi will perform on March 3rd in Madrid, March 4th in Huesca, and March 5th in Barcelona, and we're including information about these concerts and how to get tickets on this page. And just to whet your appetite, we're also including a link to a performance by Triveni on International Jazz Day in April 2013 in Paris. Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is English Corner at RadioSephirod.com. I'll leave you now with the OC from Triveni's new album, Dark Nights. See you next week.